are going to keep having fun talking about miracles. We're calling our Christmas series Miracles because every part of the Christmas story has to do with a miracle. One miracle after another. And sometimes I think we might get a little numb to it. Or a little, we hear it over and over, and you know, we don't really think about how incredible some of these parts of these stories are. I mean, do we really believe in them? I mean, all the prophecies that were so specific, prophesying that a young virgin would be carrying the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. I mean, stuff that was written hundreds of years before. You know, I mean, how does that happen? You know, an angel showing up and a star guiding kings from other countries. I mean, it's a mind blower. And sometimes we tend to think, okay, I guess that could have happened, but that's kind of Bible land. You know, that kind of stuff doesn't really happen anymore. You know, and we tend to get a little, I know it's a challenge for me, get a little desensitized because can God work the miraculous? Does He? Did He just do that to kind of start things off? And then things are just sort of back to normal. You're kind of on your own, hope things work out for you the best. Just kind of hang in there and we'll get back to things when, the second coming or something. Or is God still working the miraculous? Is He still intervening in our lives? Is He still care enough? Is He still involved enough to make a difference? And so I've been having a lot of fun asking you guys for little stories, your and big stories, your miracle stories, and it's been fun getting to hear a lot of these stories. And we've been sharing them, each week, and we've got a couple more Sundays left to hear a few more of these. But keep them coming, even after this message series. It's just a blast to hear them, because I want us to be thinking and becoming more aware, like we talked about last week, to really look at our lives and take a miracle inventory and really go back over our lives and go, you know what? That had to be God. How else could that have happened? And, even as I've been, hearing stories from you guys, I've been hearing stories from people outside our church family. One of our kids, made a friend recently, and as I was getting to know her, her mom, she was asking what I do, and things like that. And I shared with her, and she goes, "Oh, so you do sermons and things like that?" Well, yeah, do sermons. And she says, "Oh, so what are you talking about?" And I get, it's fun for me to get to explain. She says, "Oh, well, do you want to hear my miracle?" And well, actually, I really, really do. It's probably my favorite thing in life is to get to hear people's stories, good and bad. But especially when they're willing to share how God has worked in their lives. And this is, she goes, I'm kind of a spiritual person. I believe in God, but it's not like I'm a, go to church every Sunday or anything like that, I know what happened to me. I'm a well, tell me. She goes, well, I'm a breast cancer survivor, but I remember the day I was diagnosed sitting in the doctor's office, and just my head was spinning, not knowing, I've got this young child, what's going to happen to her, how is my husband going to deal with this, how am I even going to, and I started to say the word survive, and all of a sudden, this voice interrupted me, and said, not only are you going to survive, you are going to thrive. And he said it just like that. Not only, and that wasn't on my mind. I was just thinking, will I survive? And I couldn't even finish the word. And I hear, not only will you survive, you are going to thrive. And, she's back to cross-country skiing. She's fully in remission. And I mean, it's just, it's incredible. It's been a hard journey. But because of that voice of God speaking into her life. It gave her hope and encouragement to carry on through all the incredibly difficult parts of that kind of a journey, that kind of a battle. I've got a few here I want to share with you guys. Before we even get into the passage and the main talk of the day, this is so much fun just to hear some of these stories. Here's a story from one of you guys. Back when I was in middle school, and we had not lived in California long, my family planned a camping trip. We set out with our new puppy, my handicapped younger brother, my parents, and me, in our overpacked station wagon, the kind with the wood paneling. So this wasn't emailed to me, but I was like, figured that's probably a pretty good rendition of the family wagon, a good Brady Bunch road trip there. And so, who had a wood panel station wagon? And so, that's the only way to go. I mean, how cool is that? So those need to just come back. They should do, you know how they just somehow, you know when they do those limited edition, whatever? I mean, don't you think, just like we could, you can't even rent these, you know, even if you tried, but... Okay, so we were running late as we entered into farm country and it was getting dark. Suddenly the car lost power. The lights, the engine, the radio all went eerily out at once. How scary is that? We were coasting in silence on a dark, deserted highway, fleeing far from civilization. This is great writing, by the way. This was before cell phones and I think before those blue call boxes on the roadsides, if they existed and I didn't know. Middle school kid. My dad guided the station wagon off an off-ramp and pulled over just as it drifted to a complete stop. Calmly, my parents discussed options, and then my dad went out into the night alone on foot to look for a gas station. We waited for a long time in the dark, and he came back with a man in a tow truck. The friendly man took a look at the engine, said the alternator was out, needed to be replaced, but the part would have to be ordered, and everything was closed for the night. Maybe we looked pitiful sitting in our packed old station wagon with all the camping gear, with a bouncing puppy, a hyper-preteen girl, and my brother with his obvious severe cerebral palsy. He invited us to come home with him and stay overnight and through the next day while he repaired the car. Turns out his wife and two kids and their Saint Bernard were just as friendly and welcoming as he was. It also happened that they were Christians. To me, this was a miracle of human kindness, and the event has served as an example to me of the compassion that can happen through God's work. And so, but I love these two stories because, you know, one of them, you know, well, there's no, you know, that first story, it's like, okay, where did that come from? You know, but it's not always God showing up in these really stark, intense ways, but also these subtle things that can really last a lifetime and have an impact on your whole life to go, you know what? I'm not alone. And the next time something like that happens, I can trust that God is going to come through and provide the help some way. Maybe the car doesn't magically come on, but all of a sudden there's a family that's going to take care of us. And so God works through all these little ways. Okay, I got one more. Fun one for you here. You'll see what this is all about. Sometimes life gets crazy and you forget about the important things such as going to church and believing. My kids and I took a little trip with some friends recently and life had been a bit challenging and we thought we would get away by taking a little trip. We've been letting life get the best of us with sports, busy schedules, forgetting again how going to church puts a different perspective on life. As we finally got to our hotel room and tried to unwind to have a little fun, we couldn't help notice the drawer between the two beds open on the nightstand. Not thinking much of it, we closed it. We unpack, argue a little, as families do sometimes, and scatter around. A bit later, we notice the drawer open again. We ask each other, did you get something out of the drawer? All of us look at each other and know none of us opened the drawer. All of us, a little more time goes by and the drawer opens another time. The last time it opens, my son looks in there and right there in the drawer, as every hotel has, and you sometimes don't take it out, even though maybe we should, is a Bible. I look down and say, okay, God, we get it. We will read the Bible. So I pull out the Bible and ask my son if he wants to pick a verse, and he does and reads it. Then my daughter reads a verse, and we spend about 20 minutes reading the Bible. We put it back in the drawer and shut it. We go on with our night, and we see that the drawer never opens again the rest of the trip. In fact, it does not open the rest of the time we're on our trip, which was 3 days. I guess sometimes when life gets crazy and you're not putting God first, He finds a way to remind us. And so, I just love these stories. And we need to, you know, we've been talking about how the whole point of this series is to share these stories with each other, because we love reading about them in the Bible, but God is still doing big and little and in between works in our lives. And so how can we become more aware of it? How can we not lose our faith and not lose heart when the struggles and circumstances are weighing heavy in our lives, and know that He can step in and He is willing, just like a loving father wants to help his kids at any time. He's there and He is willing. So I want to share with you one of my favorite stories. It's such a great story. It's one of the few, it's one of the handful of stories in the New Testament Gospels. Remember those four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And not all the stories got put in all four Gospels. And so that's why it's kind of one of those mix and match kind of deals. You know, it's like you read one story here about Jesus turning water into wine, but for some reason it doesn't show up in another story. There's all these stories, and these guys had to package them and put them together. You know, it's like, hey, which ones, you know, got kept and retold by Luke versus John versus Matthew? This one is such a big deal that it makes all the Gospels. And so it shows up as a four-sport athlete. Okay, it's a four-gospel story. Think of it that way. And so when Jesus feeds 5,000 men, by the way, they only counted the men back then. Sorry, ladies and kids. But just so it was more than 5,000 people. We always kind of think of this as the feeding of the 5,000. It was way more than 5,000, because there was tons of moms and kids hanging out there too. And so, but I want to read you this little miracle meal and this story, and see how this particular miracle plays in a special way into our lives. And Jesus tells we learn a pretty unique lesson. But we've got to do a little work. We've got to search around and pick up some clues from some of those other gospel versions, because you don't get the full picture and all the facts and the whole weight of the story doesn't fully hit you unless you're reading through all of that Gideon Bible that shows up magically in that hotel drawer. Okay, here we go. Sometime after this, meaning Jesus was doing, and the disciples were doing a whole bunch of fun stuff, Jesus crossed to the far shore of the Sea of Galilee, that is the Sea of Tiberias. It had a Hebrew name and a Greek name. And a great crowd of people followed him because they saw the signs he had performed by healing the sick. So Jesus this is the prime of his teaching and healing ministry, and he is now just a well-known celebrity. And he's attracted a huge following because there's many people that need him. Then Jesus went off on a mountainside and sat down with the disciples. The Jewish Passover festival was near. When Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming toward him, he said to Philip, "Phil, where shall we buy bread for these people to eat?" Now this is really interesting. He asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. And it's like, and so this must have been later on, you know, the author, you know, John, you know, and all those guys kind of heard, you know, it's like, so Jesus, you didn't know, well, why were you asking Philip? He's like, I knew what I was going to do, but, you know, I wanted to see, you know, it's kind of, you know, we're going to get into that. Okay, so Philip answered him, "It would take more than half a year's wages to buy enough bread for each one to have just a bite." It's not happening, Jesus. There's no way. Another of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up, hey, here's a kid with some snacks. And so this kid showed up prepared. So this kid was obviously, you know, in the first century Palestinian Boy Scouts group. Okay, so with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish. But how far is that going to get? Jesus said, have the people sit down. There was plenty of grass in that place, and they sat down. About 5,000 men were there. Jesus then took the loaves, gave thanks, and distributed to those who were seated as much as they wanted. He did the same with the fish. When they had all had enough to eat, he said to his disciples, gather the pieces that are left over. It's not a feast without leftovers. Let nothing be wasted. So they gathered them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces of the 5 barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. So the 12 disciples would all have plenty of snacks for their next adventure. And so, but one of the most famous, incredible miracles recorded in the New Testament by Jesus, that he makes these 5 little loaves and 2 fish go so far to feed thousands, and there's even leftovers. But you kind of got to wonder, okay, so what was up? Why was this Philip's unlucky day? You know, why wasn't it the whole group? Why does Philip get singled out with a pop quiz? You know, what did he do? Was it just his turn? Was it he was being a little arrogant that day and Jesus needed to, you know, teach him? What was it about Philip? Well, we got to do a little detective work to get some appreciation of what's going on with Philip and why he drew the attention of Jesus on this particular day. Again, this doesn't get, we've got to kind of hunt around the Gospels to get a little background, because probably to that listening audience, they were a little, probably more familiar, being closer to the story and to the action than we are. And it's like, oh, you know, I see something coming a little closer than we do. We've got to work a little harder for it. And so, okay, here's a little map of the Sea of Galilee. And we learn from Luke's version, because we were reading John's version, we learn from Luke's version that when they went across the Sea of Galilee, they went to this little town of Bethsaida. That's the town that we were in. We got to read the feeding of the 5,000 in Luke's version to get that detail. And Luke's so good with all of his details. But what we don't get in Luke is the thing about Philip. And so we've got to get that from John. Maybe Jesus and John, you know, they were close pals. Maybe he revealed that to him, you know, in a little side conversation one day. You know, it's like, well, you know, I asked Philip this particularly because I wanted to see something. I wanted to give him an opportunity. I wanted to see how he would respond. And so, because Luke wasn't there. Okay, remember Luke was Paul's physician and assistant. He's getting this second hand. Remember, he went around and he wrote his gospels by interviewing everybody and kind of collecting. John was there. He was a little more Johnny on the spot than Luke. And so, okay, so we learned that from Luke, but something we learned in another part of John is a little background on Philip. That turns out, that little town in Galilee, turns out that was Philip's hometown they were in. So maybe that makes a little more sense. Well, does it? Why would that matter? And so, that they were in Philip's hometown, and Jesus was going to put the focus on him to see how he would respond. How are we going to deal with all these people? How are we going to feed everybody? Well, think about it. I mean, Philip grew up there. He knows every little corner market. He knows any nook and cranny, all the families, and what the professions are. He knows the business of the town. He knows the layout of the town. He knows what the supply and demand of his hometown is. It's like, Rick, where in Pleasant Hill are we going to host the Olympics? Not gonna, pal. All right, we've got the DVC stadium, you know, that's about it, you know, so there's no Olympics going to be happening around here, you know, so grew up here, been living here for a long time, we can't pull that off. And so Philip is naturally going to be, you know, he's comfortable there. He knows the lay of the land. And the first thing he's going to be thinking about, he's going to be tallying things up, and he's going to be pretty confident and comfortable with the question, with the challenge. And he's going to analyze it and weigh it in a certain way where maybe what if Jesus asked one of the other guys who grew up, you know, across the country, maybe he'd go, oh, I don't know, why are you asking me? I've got no clue. Oh, wait a second, Jesus, are you going to do a miracle? You're going to do a miracle, aren't you? This is what you're up to. And so, I mean, if, you know, why would Jesus ask, you know, that would be a little, Jesus would be tipping his hand a little bit if he asked one of the guys that wasn't so familiar with the area. So think about that. Think about for a second, what's your sweet spot in life? Where are you the most confident or comfortable? Where are you the most familiar? Are you, you know, what's your thing? Maybe it's gardening. Maybe it's sports. Maybe it's cooking. You know, where's your sweet spot? Where do you not need a whole lot of advice or help from anyone else? Because that's your strong suit. You nail that. You don't need anybody's advice. You don't need anybody. You don't need to pick anybody's brain. You don't need to tap any shoulders on this. That's your expertise. You're not looking for any help because that's your thing. You've got this. My 7-year-old likes to say quite a bit anytime I want to help her with something. I got this, yeah. You know, it's like, okay, are you sure? I think I need to help with that carton of milk, okay? That's a little big for you. So, no, yeah, I got this. It's like, okay, but where in life do you not need anybody's help and advice? Sometimes, many times, that's the place where we're going to miss out on God's hand, His work, His help, because we simply don't think we need it. We're just not thinking along those lines. Philip wasn't thinking along those lines because that was his place. That was his hometown. He was the one that was going to be able to dole out the advice. And so it was very, very easy for him to miss out on what Jesus had in mind. And it can be really easy for us when we feel anchored in certain parts of our lives. There's parts of our lives that we just don't feel that strong about. Like, Lord, please show up. You know, I need your help, and that's good. But there's plenty of parts where it's like, well, long it, I got this. And we can get stagnant, we can get frustrated, we can so many times kind of wonder, well, how come things aren't improving? Because this is where I'm good. This is where I got this. But we're not letting God into every part of our lives. We're missing out on all that He has for us. You know, I wanted to share a little story. Comfortable here because some of you guys have heard me tell this story, but I don't know if you've heard me tell the whole thing. Maybe Denise knows the whole story. But so when Denise and I first really felt God's clear and strong calling to us to start a new church, I mean, at first it was like, that's great, we're super excited, you know, and, you know, we're excited to get people's feedback. You know, much of that message from God, you know, came through close friends and family that were encouraging, saying, you know, if you're sensing the time is right, we would love to see this and support it. You know, so we, you know, through a lot of prayer and other conversations, things kind of went from there. And so, but a prayer that or a deal, not really even a prayer, it's a deal I had with God for a long time. Because I've been around a couple of church plants. And it's hard work, you know, and it's scary and risky and all that, but it's super exciting. And it's a blast. And it's invigorating. And it's just, you know, it's just life-giving to me. But it's a super ton of work and risk and questions and question upon question that was just talk about your head spinning. Well, as we got going, you know, and we're meeting in our family room in our backyard, and a lot of you guys were part of that in those early days, 2 summers ago. You know, one thing I knew, and I'd been given advice to several friends who had started churches in the area, I know every nook and cranny in this area, Pleasant Hill, Walnut Creek, where you might have a chance to start a church, where you could rent. But something popped up that I'd never thought of. And I was just on it, like ugly on an ape, as they like to say. And so, and that was one of the local private schools. I happened to be friends with the principal there, and he was totally wanted us to start a church there, but we ran into all these permit problems. And so, evidently, part of the deal with the city when the school bought the property, it was just from Monday through Friday. Wasn't they couldn't just do whatever they wanted on the weekends. Weird, huh? And so all of a sudden, and several of, you know, of you guys, I took to that school and I said, hey, you know, this is going to work. I know it's kind of dingy. We're going to have to get this. We're going to have to get that. Maybe we'll buy the school new chairs so, you know, we're not just falling on these kind of old, broken down, you know, chairs. But we're going to need sound and video equipment. But we can do all that. You know, we'll figure it out. But then the door shut. You know, and here we are, you know, in our backyard and, you know, needing a place where we can meet, invite people, you know, grow, have something for the kids, you know, and all those kinds of things. Like, well, what happened? I know all these, you know, and so I just started going to work because this is what I'm good at. I'm good at solving problems. I'm good at turning over stones. No stone will be left unturned when I'm involved. I want to know every detail. I'll talk to anybody any time of day or night. I just get me in there and I can, you know, I discovered even more nooks and crannies. I went around to every church around here and found that there's a church meeting and a church meeting and a church in this area. I mean, it was like, no, there wasn't like any single place to meet in an afternoon or evening anywhere. There's so many, you know, little churches, you know, like us that are just, you know, filling up all the gaps and all the spaces around here. I was getting super frustrated. I finally found one little church pretty close to here, and I found out, and this is in the sweltering heat of summer. Yeah, we never got around to putting in air conditioning, you know, because we meet in the mornings, and it's only, you know, it's like, oh, man, I don't know how we're going to pull that off. But maybe we, you know, if we did, maybe we could raise some money to get air conditioning in there, bring in some fans, and, you know, just tallying up the different costs. How's that going to work? You know, Wi-Fi, I didn't get Wi-Fi in there. And I'm just, you know, I finally gave up. I was, like, so discouraged and so disheartened, you know. It went from what looked like at least a solid place that was going to be fairly affordable with the private school. Because a public school, they've got all these restrictions, and it's a lot more expensive. It's a hard place to start. You've got to buy even more equipment and all those things to get going. And I'm just driving around the neighborhood, and I'm all, gosh, God, I know I had that deal with you that I would start a church if you just ever drop a building out of the sky. Because it's so hard to find a place. But I just, you know, I surrendered that, and I just felt like, you know, anything that works will get in there. And I remember just driving around the corner here, coming from another church that just said, yeah, over on Third. Yeah, we've got two other churches that meet here in the afternoon and evening. Really? Yeah. A lot of churches around here. And so I remember coming around, and I'm like, there used to be, is there still, there's a little old church over around the corner from Larkey Park, I think. Maybe, I think think maybe it closed down or something like that. You know, there used to be a little building over there. I remember coming around the corner over here and just being blown away. It's like, well, who built that? Because if you've been in this neighborhood, this building has only been around in the last couple of years. And it's like, oh, man, there's no way. There's no way. There's probably like, you know, four churches that meet in there. And then I remember that first conversation with Gail here at Community of Christ. You know, tell me more about your church. And you guys are starting up. Yeah, we'd love to have you. We've been praying that somehow God would use this building that was this incredible blessing to us, you know, in a way. And I just, you know, and she starts showing me around the church. Yeah. And I'm looking around and I'm seeing all the natural light. And you gotta remember, I've probably been in 50 different rooms trying to, you know, see, okay, can we meet at the classroom, the downstairs at the Lindsay Museum? You know, but it opens up at 10. You have to be out of there, you know, before 9:30. And I think it's like, okay, that's not gonna work. And where would you put the kids? So every little nook and cranny, everything I'm analyzing is a good analytical mind. I just want to make sure everything works. Okay, where are you going to put the screen? How are you going to, you know, where are you going to put the sound equipment? All that kind of stuff. I'm looking around here and I'm like, where would you, you know, I'm walking through the channel, like, where would you put a projector around here? And she shows me in the AV room, she's like, well, we have this. Would this work okay for you guys? You know, and it's like, it's like, you guys have been here in the summer. I mean, air conditioning, like, cools the place off and 2.5 minutes, and we've got Wi-Fi, and just all the things that for those of you when we were first starting, it's like, it'd be so great because we can use, you know, iPads and Apple TV, you know, but we just have to raise a little money to get, you know, back to the school, you know, we'll mount the screen up there, but they didn't have anything like that. You know, everywhere, just, well, I guess, you know, well, we would need this, and we would need that. Every time we would go into a room, and they you could have this, you could use this more. I guess we could bring in some sound equipment. Oh, well, there's our soundboard, and there's sound wired in every room. So that worked for you. Here was the thing, and you guys have, you know, I got in the habit years ago of doing talks, you know, especially 7 years ago when I had a herniated disc. You know, sometimes it's nice to, you know, have a stool to kind of fall back on, you know, given a talk. And I remember going, you know, that was one of the things on my list was, well, I'm gonna need a stool to sit on, and I like those padded, you know, so I'll have to get myself one of those. And I jokingly said that to Gail. I said, man, it looks like the only thing I'm gonna need is my little stool. So she's like, oh, well, this, you know, I keep this in the kitchen over here. And I mean, to me, this is like a symbol of God's direct sense of humor, actually, with me, and saying, Rick, I remember your deal, and I'm glad you finally got over that, but that's what it felt like, and it didn't hit me for months, you guys. I don't know why, I was just so caught up with it. Oh my gosh, here's the place. And I remember one day, you know, coming around the corner again to check on something here, and looking, and going, wait a second, that's the building that fell out of the snow. Oh my gosh. I didn't think that would ever really happen. You know, it's kind of a metaphor. I mean, he's taking it literally. And so we've just been so blessed to have this space. And they're so, Community Christ is so generous, and we pay a fraction of what we would even at the most affordable places here. It's become a, you know, a neat partnership in ministry. You know, last year we kind of took the lead on the Christmas Eve service. This year they're going to take the lead, and we'll play a support role that will come together as two, you know, very different church families. But it just makes it, you know, even more fun. And so, but it was just this experience to me that showed, okay, I can always count on God. Sometimes, very often, it's not going to look like it's in my timing. But one of the clues that I've got to see sooner than later is if I'm good at it, if I feel strong and confident in that area,
wall between me and God as far as His ability to work through and get through to me because of how I'm resisting it. Because it's not, no, God, I got this. I know every single place around here. Now that it's time, I'm gonna find the best place. And I was at the end of my rope. And it's like, bam. It's like Jesus knew what He had in mind, what He was going to do. There's this great, probably one of the best lines, I don't know if you hear me say that a lot, but one of the best lines in the Bible is when Jesus responds to a prayer of Paul's. Paul has this incredible vision and experience. It's like one of those near-death experiences when you go up to heaven and you just have this incredible like experience with God, and He describes being caught up to the third heaven, which means, you know, now you pass the atmosphere and the stars, you're in the abode of God. And because He was shown all these incredible mysteries, God, to keep him humble, gave him a little affliction. And He called that a thorn in his side. And theologians debate, what was that, a metaphor? Was it an actual painful affliction that he had? And Paul says, I prayed over and over, God, take this away from me. And Jesus responds, all right, my grace is sufficient for you. And then he says this, if you really want to feel my power and presence and strength in your life, it's going to come through weakness. My strength gets perfected in your weak areas. You're not going to feel it where you feel that you're strong. You're not going to sense it as much if you're sensing that you've got this. If you feel like it's a strength, it's not going to come in as clearly. My strength is made perfect in weakness. That is when you're going to really come alive and feel my presence and power in you. And you're going to have that full confidence, and you're going to be so aware of my working in all the details around you when you let yourself be weak and let my strength take over. And to where Paul responds, you know, his response back, and God speaking that into his life is, I get it now. For when I am weak, then I am strong. When I let myself be weak, when I shed that facade of thinking that I'm in control because of this familiarity or experience or comfort level or confidence that I've built up in an area, when I'm willing to let that go, then the strength comes. When I can let myself be weak, now I'm making room for the miracles that otherwise I'm shutting out. I'm shutting God out because I'm sending the message, I don't need you in this area. But when I send the message that I need you in every area, not just what I perceive as my weaknesses, but my perceived strength also, I need to let go of all of those. And I'm going to feel God's presence in a way that I've never felt before. As His strength is made perfect in weakness. So whatever you feel you can handle, stop feeling like that. Okay? Because you're going to miss out on the miracles that God wants to do in every part of your life. Let yourself be weak. It's okay. Because that's how you're going to feel true strength that God wants to build up in your life. And I think the more we all do that, the more we're going to be feeling and seeing and sensing His miraculous works in our lives. The more stories we're going to pile up, to be able to share with each other, to be able to encourage each other, to be able to show each other that God is indeed involved, over-involved in our lives. You think you're a helicopter parent. keep sharing your miracle stories. Last week I shared my little one with Eva. It's kind of, she's the poster child of this series for me. So keep emailing those. We've got a doozy coming up for you next week. You're not going to want to miss that one. I'm still, really? No way. Okay. All right. I'll buy it. But, yeah, so there's a cliffhanger for you. So keep making room for God's work and let His strength shine through by allowing yourself to be weak. It's okay. It's not a weakness, it's a strength to be weak before the God of the universe and let His strength flow into your life.
So as Ryan comes on up and we continue to worship and reflect on that.